Yeah, baby. Time for Truth About Markets, right, Stacy?
Oh, yeah, you can tell. We're actually walking through the market on a windy day, but you know what? It's actually sunny and it's not raining in London.
Yeah, well, they say that the January was the most rain in 100 years in the UK, double the historic average. Certainly had that experience.
Yeah, well, that's a big story this week. Of course, oh, by the way, shriekers and deniers should shut their ears now because they don't like to... Actually, a lot of these people don't know that precipitation is a matter of climate. You know, the amount of rain or the amount of snow, the amount of precipitation. Snow is also precipitation, by the way. So that's part of the climate. They, for some reason, it's not in the Bible or something, so they don't believe it. But it's true. And so there's unusual amounts of rain here because, of course, it's not cold enough to snow. Other places, there's record amounts of snow because it's cold enough to snow. Just like, you know, when the Earth is 10 degrees warmer, it'll still be cold enough to snow in Russia and Greenland and Iceland and Norway and Finland and all those places. But in California, there's record amounts of drought. That is pretty wild there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, really, really stunning. Climate chaos is in the mix, for sure.
We're entering our cafe now. This is our market for coffee. This is where I get my coffee and porridge. Two cappuccinos. We're getting there now. And so we're talking about the record drought in California. And why does that matter?
Yeah.
You know, what does this have to do with the economy?
Yeah.
This is what people say.
Oh, yeah.
What does record drought have to do with the economy of California?
Yes, well, you know, California is a huge agricultural state, obviously, with a lot of avocados and nuts and raisins. And so... You know, that economy is completely threatened. The two are linked. Economy, ecology, same thing.
Well, California is the number one agricultural producer in the United States in terms of value, dollar value. Now, some other crops, such as wheat, might be more important to the survival of humans. But by value, it produces the most in the United States. It's something like 88% more than the number two state after it in terms of value. And that the number two state is Texas, which, of course, also had extreme drought over the last few years. California, 9% of the state is now in exceptional drought, which is higher than extreme drought. So it's the worst of the drought situations. There's the snowpack at the moment is just 12% of normal. So it's going to be a dire spring. And now the managers of the reservoir say that they're not going to allow any of the water to be diverted to the agricultural region because they're reserving it for humans to consume.
Right. So the ability for the ecology, the ecosystem of California and... the United States and the planet, its carrying capacity for humans, now approaching 7 billion, is diminishing quite rapidly. So I would imagine we're going to have an event like back in the 1400s or so. You had the bubonic plague, wiped out half of humanity. This will be a man-made climate plague, wiping out probably a good 2 or 3 billion people, and then start over again.
Yeah, and now the interesting thing about the water is, of course, you can liken this to currency and money. Because one of the things that Sandeep Jaitley always tells us from bullionbasis.com or faquetaresearch.com, what he always says on our show is that there will be no price for gold. No amount of dollars will satisfy somebody in exchange for that ounce of gold. So here we have a water situation where no amount of water will... a desperate person trade. No amount of dollars will they trade that water for those dollars.
Yeah, well, water is extremely scarce. because I think something like less than 3% of all the water in the globe is fresh water. And that most of that is in two main areas. One is in Russia. It's 20% of the world's fresh water supply in their freshwater lake near Baikal, bordering China. So it's a scarce commodity, and it is life itself. And you have threats in the water from a couple different areas. Obviously, the man-made climate chaos is destroying available fresh water supplies, but also another water crisis would have to be the overfishing that goes on around the oceans. So there's running out of protein, and so that's becoming another issue, isn't it? What are you having?
I'm going to have a porridge. Yeah. Max is having one royal egg. So that's what we're having for breakfast, just so you know. And the music is playing. And by the way, this is Resonance 104.4 FM, and we're the Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy. That's Max Kaiser, who's, by the way, Max Coin launches. You know, everybody should know that Max Coin launches on Wednesday, February 5th at 7:30 p.m. local time. So you could start straight away with your mining of the Max Coin. The wallet will be released at maxcoin.co.uk, and whatever your operating system is, whether it's Windows or Mac or Linux, there will be a wallet for you in which will be embedded the mining software you need to mine these Max Coins. So everybody has equal chance. There's plenty of notice for everybody to be involved, and hopefully I'll figure out how to mine the Max Coin.
Yeah, that's exciting. Definitely some buzz about it, because it does fit in with our other campaigns like Crash JP Morgan Buy Silver or Karma Bank, Pirate My Film, you know. So it's all part of the same idea, isn't it, Stacy?
Yes, it's part of the same idea of basically declaring independence. That there are, I think, you know, certainly we were the first in the global media by 2 years to be talking about Bitcoin. And, you know, they start, the mainstream media like CNBC and MSNBC and BBC started talking about it in 2013, around February, March. And the reason why they started talking about it was because the U.S. government, the Treasury, issued some sort of guidance on it. And that caused them to start talking about it. And all they focused on was the currency aspect of it, the price exchange, the rate of exchange with the U.S. dollar. And by that point, you and I were well beyond that. We were already into the blockchain and all the future of what Bitcoin really is. The revolutionary aspect of it is not the currency. It's not thinking of it like a dollar or a pound or a yen. It's thinking of it as the blockchain and the payment system, but also the public ledger.
Mm, yeah, that's true. So there's a lot of more ancillary businesses that are going to be tied to the blockchain. And so this is a story that's really just beginning. And, you know, it's a litmus test, because people who are for Bitcoin are against tyranny. So you find it's interesting, because some of the communities are split. Like there's the Bitcoin Foundation split, there's the Libertarian split, because some Libertarians are against Bitcoin, which would suggest that they're pro-state, pro-tyranny. So that it's revealed them to be closet statists. People like Gary North, for example, Lou Rockwell, they claim to be anti-state, but if they were truly anti-state, they would be pro-Bitcoin, but they're not, so they've been exposed.
Well, Gary North is very pro-statist. He wants God's law on Earth, which just means, you know, death for blasphemy, death for lying to your parents, things like that. So, however, a few things. First of all, theoretically, as a Austrian, he should understand that all value derives from human consciousness. So it shouldn't matter to him. If humans, by their own, without a dictator, without a federal authority demanding they accept Bitcoin, have on their own decided that Bitcoin has value, then he should say, well, then it has value. It doesn't matter what, you know, humans decided for some reason that this gold flecked rock had value and silver, shiny silver, had value. It wasn't somebody telling them that they had value, that humans decided collectively that it had a value.
Humans want to trade. You know, the humans trade. That's going back to the earliest humans. You know, they there's a need, there's an idea of trading. I mean, animals trade, you know, plants trade. Plants trade, you know, carbon dioxide for oxygen, and oxygen for carbon dioxide, in something called the photosynthesis exchange. So it's very natural to life itself. So what happened is that it figured out that gold, given its scarcity, its portability, its fungibility, its desirability, became the best medium of exchange. So said Aristotle. So said the fellow who ran the Bank of England here originally. The mathematician, Newton.
Oh, Newton.
Yeah, Isaac Newton. And this was the story for 10,000 years, 5,000 years, until cryptocurrencies came around, and we now have something that is equivalent to gold in many ways. And that's what's going on with that.
Well, that's the thing about the blockchain, is it is not as many who will be shrieking right by now in the comment section will say, you know, the government won't accept it for taxes, or the government doesn't back it with their guns. You know, most people only feel comfortable with some sort of alpha male threatening to kill them unless they use this thing. So the blockchain is this is the value. It's the public faith in this thing, blind, you know, without prejudice. And without, you know, it's all open and opaque and transparent, unlike the opaque U.S. Federal Reserve System, which is also part of the Bank of Japan. It's all the same system, but it's very opaque.
Right. So the blockchain doesn't support wacky ideologies. I mean, this idea that the dollar is supported by men with guns. And but if you ask these people, are you statist? They'll say, no, no. And they'll say, but you just said that your currency is backed by men with guns. And they'll say, well, it's America. And America is a universally accepted force for good. It's not a state. It's a phenomenon that was birthed from the loins of God himself. And it's only good. And there's nothing bad about it. So they're wacky ideologists who don't see that they're supporting wacky ideology, dogma, zealotry, stupidity, and the dollar supports that. So Bitcoin is anti-stupidity, and so the stupid people are revolting. You know, the stupid people are de-evolving. Bitcoin is evolving. So that's why I say it's around the verge of a mass global wipeout in the population.
Well, certainly end of empire days seem to have these sort of masses of stupid or crazy people. You had it at the end of the Roman Empire. Of course, everybody knows about the bread and circuses, and the population wanted their free rice and their free blood and gore. They wanted to see lots of people put to death. And they also, at the end of the Spanish Empire, of course, they went crazy in a different way. They wanted religious persecution and their fellow neighbors bludgeoned to death.
Well,
and
in the Super Bowl, which is coming up, you can, for like $50,000, you get a package of tickets to the Super Bowl, which is gladiators, basically. You know, the players routinely suffer permanent brain damage because they're running at each other, 300 pounds, and hitting each other in the head. So it's kind of like gladiatorial encounters, but in a modern twist. And then for $50,000, you get tickets to the sport, to this gladiatorial contest, plus cocaine, plus hookers. So they just busted this ring in New Jersey of people that were selling this package, this weekend package of hookers, cocaine, drugs, and Super Bowl. So that's not too dissimilar from the old Roman days of bread and circuses, for sure.
So for whatever reason, you know, humans have been the same throughout thousands of years, and we always think we've discovered something new, or we're different from how we were 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years ago. But we always tell people about that book. I think it's called 5,000 Years of Trade or something like that,
yeah.
Where, you know, everybody today thinks that we, you know, especially Americans with their think tanks, will think they discovered free trade, and we have this new concept, this idea of free trade. When it, when you learn about, you know, guys 5,000 years ago setting out in boats tied together with string, leaving China and sailing to Africa, and you're like, holy cow, half of them never made it. They just didn't make it. So, but that was safer than going overland, where you had all the you know, the bandits who would just take your stuff and kill you. So, you know, but they still did it, despite that. And now I want to talk about that, because that there was risk-reward. They said there was a 50% chance they would never make it, but these guys, for some reason, still set out and did it, because they figured the risk was worth the possible reward. Well, there was an article on Zero Hedge today from an economist, a professor at Harvard, who said he's taking his money, his $1 million, out of Bank of America. He had $1 million in a checking account, collecting 0% interest. And one of the reasons why he did it is because he's looking at these emerging market crises and everything falling apart again, and we don't, because of the opaqueness, we don't know how much debt they actually have and how much fraud is on the books of Bank of America. So he said, because he's being paid 0%, he's paying nothing for the risk. He said, even if there's a 1% risk, then he should, that's $10,000. There's a 1% risk of them collapsing. He said, that's $10,000 of my money that I should be paid in compensation.
Yeah.
Or 0.1%. He said, that would be $1,000, but I'm not even receiving that. So he's being paid zero for the risk that they might collapse. So he used to get on the account, he said, $1,000 a week. So that was before interest rates were set down to zero.
Right. So there's something called risk in the capitalist model. And with interest rates at 0%, it's people who have money in the banks are being told that their money is as safe as safe as it possibly can. It's so safe that they're not paying you any compensation whatsoever for lending the bank $1 million. They're going to give you nothing for the bank having use of your $1 million, even though the bank, as he points out, in the case of Bank of America, they've loaned that $1 million out to 20, 30, 40 million dollars of loans are backing that $1 million deposit. So if this was capitalism, he would be getting a rate of return commensurate with junk bonds. So he'd be getting 12, 13, 14% annual rates of return. But since this is not capitalism, but it's socialism in America, he gets no return on his money, but gets all the risk. He gets all the risk.
Yeah, he said he would be willing to pay an anti-lending bank, for example, money to hold his cash, as long as they weren't lending it out. And he was guaranteed then the return of it. And he said, Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations talks about the original B of A, which was the Bank of Amsterdam. There used to be a bank called Bank of Amsterdam in 1609, and it would not lend out your money. And you paid it to hold your money. Of course, money was gold back then. But the other, what they found out, the bank did end up collapsing because they were lending it out to these East Indies companies and they weren't telling anybody. So they were secret. No. So you're always going to rely. Well, that's the thing about the blockchain, for example, is like you're just having faith in whoever's holding your money and say they're not lending it out, that they're not doing that.
Mm-hmm. Right. The Bitcoin is actually a lot more successful scheme for saving money as opposed to a bank, because the banks have no regulation. I mean, here's a guy who is just waking up to the fact that the banks are completely unregulated and completely reckless. But this is not news. It's been obvious for the last 20 years as the various markets around the world crash every few years and then get more unstable and then crash even harder. So that's the trend. I mean, now we're in pre-crash mode at the moment because it's been about 5 or 6 years from the last major crash. There was no reform at all. The too big to fail banks got bigger, and the risk that they are taking to keep their banks afloat has expanded exponentially. So, yeah, maybe this will be now, you know, the next few months could see another huge crash, but it's totally, totally predictable. I hope, you know, a lot of people say it was unforeseen or a surprise, and I hope nobody listening to this show would be fooled by that.
Yeah, well, you know, on top of that, compared to the beginning of the financial crisis, not only do our governments have more debts that they've foisted upon us because of the bailing out the banks. Now, remember Royal Bank of Scotland, which you, listening to the show, you British taxpayers, you own this bank. You own 85% of it, and it's just declared £8 billion loss. So there's no chance you're ever going to get the money back. So there's that. But on top of that, to continue paying the bankers as much money as they want, and they're demanding from your politicians and governments and central banks, unless they're threatening to blow up the system, is there has been the biggest real decline in wealth and income, I mean income, in the UK in 50 years over the past 4 years, since 2010. There's your real income is declining by 2.2% a year. And yet on top of that, all your prices are going up. Your house prices are going up. People are claiming it's not a bubble. This time it's different.
Yeah, well, I saw an article in the UK press. Somebody was writing about why is my house making more money than I am?
Yeah.
So they were making like £20,000 a year in income, but their house was appreciating by £30,000 a year. And, you know, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but in the not-too-distant future, there's going to be a major collapse in house prices, so you're going to have negative equity, and you won't have income, and the prices will continue to go up. So, but in this country, people think that they're getting away with something, and that's they think they're being very cheeky, like, oh, the government is inflating this housing bubble, and I don't care if it's destroying the economy because I just bought a new 20-inch, 40-inch, or 50-inch plasma screen TV, and until it blows up. And the only question is, will it blow up before this next election here in the UK, which I'm not sure when that is, but I think it's in the next year.
Well, they call it 5 weeks ahead of time. It has to be by next year this time, so it has to be by within 5 years of the previous one, so they could call it after 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, but it sounds like they're going to wait until the very last minute, especially because Labour surged ahead, so maybe they don't want to lose power yet before they bring in the last.
It's foolish because the longer they wait, the higher the probability of a crash, and then they'll definitely lose power. If they call an election now, then they can still have a chance to discredit Labour by slandering them unmercifully with lies and just getting one of their consultants to, you know, take fraudulent photos of Ed Miliband picking his nose or something. And then they can manufacture a win. But when they would have a chance at manufacturing a win with dirty tricks. But if they wait, and the chance of a crash in the real estate market goes up every single day, then if they won't win after the crash. So I think they're playing a very dangerous game.
Yeah, and I also wonder, you know, so they said that two-thirds of all properties, new properties sold here in London, two-thirds go to Asian investors, so who never even live here. It's kind of like that Bishop's Row up north of London, where all these Saudis own the properties, and they're like trees and ferns and rivers running through these properties because they've never actually been there in the 20 years they own these properties. It's just a place to park their wealth. For, you know, the council taxes here in the UK, property taxes are so low. So it's cheaper than storing, you know, £30 million. If you have a £30 million home in Kensington, you only pay £2,000 a year in council tax. Which is a lot cheaper than putting it in £35 million of gold.
Yeah, that's right. To pay 1 or 2% to store your gold, here, adjusted, you're paying virtually nothing to store your wealth in a $300 million mansion that you've never lived in and you're not keeping up at all. And that's right.
Now, but the point is that all that money from China is obviously from the very well-connected people and people looting the nation and taking the money out. Now, that's why the UK property market has always been quite strong, is that since the 90s, they've really provided a safe haven for looted wealth from other nations, from Russia, from Saudi Arabia, from the Middle East and China. But maybe one day, whoever the leader, I know they're, the leaders of China are involved in a lot of these money laundering. But once it comes to 1.3 billion people marching on Beijing and demanding an end to corruption, and those people, there's 90,000 riots a year already. Once that happens, China could go the way of the U.S. and become like chasing their nation's wealth. And so at one point, there's also going to be an end to the loot available to... I mean, Russia's also cracking down. I know from a Russian friend of ours that they were saying that as of this year, just like America, Russians have to report all income all over the world and also have a Russian bank account. So even if they're working here in London, they have to be paid into their Russian bank account and then they bring it out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these are all... straws in the wind, I guess you could say, about how this global real estate Ponzi scheme is peaking. We've hit peak real estate Ponzi, probably. So it's starting to unwind, and it's just going to be interesting because the general population never understood why their house prices were going up to begin with. Mm-hmm. So you can tell them that it's because the government prints money, and they'll say... They just don't understand it. They think it's their own personal genius. That's the reason why house prices are going up. So when house prices collapse, they won't understand that either, but they will look for scapegoats. They will look, and we've seen now around the world a replay of the last major inflation depression, with groups of people who are angry because they've had all their wealth stolen, looking for scapegoats. And it gets very, very violent very quickly.
Well, of course, one of the arguments I heard when I tweeted, and you know, the Telegraph retweeted this, and RTE in Ireland, was I said that, you know, the reason why London property prices are so high is like an oligarch somewhere else could put $70 million into a property here and only pay a bit over £2,000 per year on that. Whereas if they bought $70 million worth of gold, bullion, it would be a lot higher than that. You have to pay like 2% storage fees on that per year. Now, somebody said, oh, yeah, but there's maintenance costs for the property. Now, this Bishop's Row area in North London, they disprove that because they point out one property, for example, that somebody in the Saudi royal family just sold for £35 million. They bought it for $1.3 million 20 years ago. Now, this is the one with the stream and rivers and ferns and trees.
Yeah, no maintenance costs.
Zero maintenance costs. So they had nobody there. And also, the journalist of The Guardian who went up there to report on this story, they also found that an Iranian guy walking in the area, and he lived in one of the houses. He didn't want to give his name, but he said it's actually quite a dreadful neighborhood because nobody lives there. So it's really quiet and lonely. And he said, but there's a lot of traffic on that road. Bishop's Avenue is like really high speed traffic flying through. So he said it's noisy and horrible. So it's not even like a desirable place. Now, Adam Smith, going back to Adam Smith and talking about the Bank of Amsterdam and whether, you know, you should have a bank that you charges you to hold your deposit safe. And he was all for a land tax so that you wouldn't have, you know, this is part of your national wealth, national capital, and you want to make sure it's used most efficiently. It's not efficient to provide basically a bullion bank. And in fact, Boris Johnson used that very phrase this week. He said these properties in London, we have to start taxing these unused properties because he said it's like a bullion bank in the sky.
Yeah, well, that's all good points. That's going to happen, I'm sure.
Well, we know for a fact, you can, in fact, what you're competing with when they consider a property tax on these unused properties is bullion banks and what they charge to store that same amount of gold. And you know that's as long as it's slightly cheaper than bullion, they'll probably keep the house instead. And they're willing to pay up to that. But the fact that you, the taxpayer, don't insist on them charging these people, you're the one leaving the money on the table.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, so they don't maintain the house. They put in a few million. It's not worth $100 million. So they could sell it at any moment. And the new owner would be happy to just raise the house, tear it down, and build a new one. And the new owner would still be happy to do that. So you don't have to maintain it. It's just complete. It's a bastardization of any kind of economic theory you might come up with. It's just doesn't make any sense, really. No, stupid.
Well, also, you know, the problem you're starting to see is that New York City also has this now. In San Francisco, is it the success births the decay, the inevitable decay, because young, less wealthy, you know, you're not, it's harder for young innovators to move into an area where it's way too expensive to even take the time to spend in your, you know, in your lab coming up with genius ideas while trying to pay these astronomical rents and house prices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, meanwhile, in the gold business, there seems to be some new interest in gold.
Well, yeah, that continues apace. More and more shifting the gold from west to east. There was another huge sell-off again in the U.S. But there's less and less in the GLD, so there's fewer and fewer holders. It's not like there are fewer and fewer sellers around. So at one point, there will be no more sellers. And it could have been the last capitulation on Wednesday or Thursday of this past week, where there was a sell-off. But there will be a final capitulation sale.
Mm. I suppose, you know, people are accumulating, and you still have a lot of paper being printed out there, and curious to see what this tapering that they've done is. You know, markets have come in, so I mean, are they just going to let markets collapse? I guess not. So they're going to have to come in and reverse themselves, right, with some massive printing.
Yeah, well, they'll have to reverse themselves, I would think, or perhaps the U.S. likes this. I mean, I was reading a piece today. Oh, well, the guy about the Bank of America thing, he was talking about this. The Fed has caused more disasters than anybody. They're like the man-made global financial chaos causers. So they're like the oil industry of the climate, of markets. So he's saying that they caused the bubble, or certainly the flow of hot money to Brazil, to Argentina, to emerging markets. And now the chaos of it winding back is causing grief and strife and chaos there just as much as the inflows did. So, but it was caused by the Fed. Now, the other thing that is possible, you know, we talked to Pippa Mongan about this, is she used to be on the plunge protection team. And she said that maybe in the early days it was more interventionist, but now the role of the plunge protection team isn't all that proactive. She said it's the U.S. Treasury Department, that they actually have a trading floor at the U.S. Treasury. There's a floor of traders buying and selling shares on behalf of the U.S. Treasury.
Well, that's a distinction without a difference. So in other words, it is the plunge protection team. It's just gotten bigger. And their mandate is the same, to pick prices that they're comfortable with and then trade, do whatever trading they need to do to get the markets to those prices. So it's like, you know, in Soviet era, they're saying we need to manufacture 1 million tractors, and we do whatever we can to get to the 1 million tractors, even though the economy, underlying economy, may be destroyed and there'll be no use for those 1 million tractors.
Yeah. Now, and yet the U.S. goes around the world with these trade deals and say, you need a free market, you need to open up your market, we need free markets, and America's about free markets, free markets, free markets. But if they had a free market, there would be no trading floor at the U.S. Treasury Department.
That's right. So they're just not about free markets. It's about just about wealth. It's about rent-seeking, essentially, right? So especially deals like TPP and these other global trade deals, you know, it's just about wealth extraction. It's not about trade in any way. But it's getting harder to follow American politics, you know, because it's, I don't know, it's like watching,
Well, bread and circuses is worldwide, you know, bread and circuses. It's just there. It's like watching Nero bring his donkey, his jackass, into the Senate. This is it. This is just filled with.
I think Nero was, at least he was entertaining. Caligula, at least, you know, was entertaining. But here it's like the short bus. You know, America has become the short bus of countries. You know, they're just dominated by folks that have got chromosomal problems. And
well, I think it's the U.S. is a lot like a mixture of the Roman and Spanish empires as they were collapsing. It has all the religious fundamentalist crazies, but also the, you know, the very violent sort of just torture for torture's sake and jackassism in the Senate that the Romans did. The Romans were very bloody and violent and lots of torture and throwing their citizens out of planes of the day, you know, the equivalent of what the U.S. is doing. But
The Germans don't have much of a reputation for humor.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of that is part of their history, and certainly World War II and the aftermath of World War II. You just don't equate Germans with humor. And it's becoming like that way with America. Like, I'm not really interested in American comedy anymore, but for the same reason I think people would not be interested in humor coming out of Germany in the 1940s or 50s. Because you've just witnessed a country engage in wholesale global slaughter. So what can Jon Stewart or Bill Maher say that's funny from a country that's a genocidal maniac? It's just not funny anymore.
Well, the other thing is these the last few studies and polls that have been coming out about Fox News. So first of all, the study shows that if you watch Fox News as your only source of news, you know less about world affairs than any other news watchers, right? This is a study they showed that the people who claim self-identify as watching Fox News actually knew a lot less about world affairs than any other person. Now, 70% of Republicans in a poll this week for like Gallup said that their only source of news they trust is Fox. So they're a very fundamentalist echo chamber sort of wrong thinking, by the way. They have the wrong picture of the world, and these are very powerful people watching this, and there's a high level of shriek. It's getting higher and higher, higher pitch, and it's dangerous for them. It's dangerous for everybody around that shriek, that whirlwind of shriek.
Yeah, market failure. You know, you don't have any competition. There's no competing points of view that gets the same kind of distribution.
Yeah.
And so you end up with this extremely self-limiting, self-hating population that is just becoming less and less amusing.
Yeah, and by the way, Fox News and all these Republicans will also shriek very loudly that, you know, MSNBC is the mouthpiece of the Democrats. And yet, on the Democratic side, 22% found NPR, National Public Radio, the most trusted source of news. It was like 20% found MSNBC, the same as CNN was about 20%, and then 17% one of the other networks like ABC or CBS or NBC. So there was like at least, I know it's a team sport or the red team, blue team, but at least the blue team does have a more diverse opinion because NPR is a bit different from MSNBC, which is a bit different from CNN. So at least they're not getting the disinfo from one controlling source, which is, in the case of Fox, is Rupert Murdoch and the Saudi royal family.
Yeah, well, they just don't get the distribution. So, because the other side can launch drone attacks. So, you know, it's they just don't get the distribution because they threaten you with death. So it's kind of like Mubarak in America. You know, I'm sure in Mubarak's Egypt there was some blogger with a distribution of 10 people before he got thrown in jail. Same thing with in the U.S., you know, NPR. They don't do anything. They don't say anything. They have nothing to say. If they did, they would all be thrown in prison. So let's not kid ourselves. There is no opposing view in the U.S. It's just one homogenized, sanitized call to slaughter. That's the American way.
Yeah. What was that MSNBC tweeter? Somebody from the used the tweet account, the Twitter account of MSNBC, and tweeted out something, which, by the way, was true. It was weird because they ended up firing this guy because he offended the Republicans. It might have been something with climate change or what.
So what's going to happen with Maxcoin? So Maxcoin, you know, it's interesting that on Bitcoin, there's some divisions in Bitcoin because the Bitcoin Foundation, I think it kind of opened up divisions within Bitcoin Foundation with the Charlie Shrem incident because he was asked to resign from the Bitcoin Foundation. And so people were, you know, asking themselves, why even have a foundation which is centralized to represent a currency that is decentralized? I never understood it. Never made sense to me. I think a lot of people now are asking that same question. I think people who are being asked to join the Bitcoin Foundation are declining because they don't think it's in keeping with the ethos of Bitcoin. And Maxcoin, of course, would have no such problem because we're dedicated toward having no centralization, I would say.
Well, I think because of the success, the likes of Western Union and Bank of America and PayPal and all these people and JP Morgan are going to, they have powerful lobbyists and they go down to Washington and they tell Washington guys what to do. And if you do this for me, then you'll get a job at JP Morgan as a consultant, just like Tony Blair, for £2 million a year. And so they feel like instead of having JP Morgan and Bank of America and PayPal and Western Union writing some legislation and regulation regarding Bitcoin, that they better create a foundation to go represent their interests in D.C. or to counteract any disinfo.
Well, let's say you're Copernicus and you just figured out that the Earth revolves around the sun and not the other way around. And you go down to the Catholic Church and you say, hey, you know what, Catholic Church? You are completely wrong. The Earth is not the center of the solar system. It's not the center of the universe. It's not the center of your world anymore. The sun is the center. So there's no amount of lobbying. There's no amount of money. There's no amount of anything that's going to convince these Catholic people that you are right and to embrace what you're saying. It's just self-evident. It is what it is. And over the 100 years, they had to back down and come up with some new fakakta scheme to, you know. I saw that the Catholic Church had $100 billion in revenues last year. So it's it's a lot of money goes into the Pope's pratfalls at the Vatican for the playful amusement of the masses.
Yeah, but the sort that watches Fox News, this unitary opinion, this crowd think, is a very easy target for getting money. And, you know, my grandmother was like one of those Catholics. She sent so much money. She would just send money all the time in these envelopes to the church. And here on Fox News, you also have the sort of shysters selling all sorts of crap to the audience that watches it. And they're one of the most lucrative targets. So that we just covered this story. We looked at the story about Patriots for Survival. You know, you put Patriot in the title of your crap that you sell, and you are guaranteed a high income. So here's some guy, a liberal guy, actually, from Harvard, went to Harvard, graduated, and started basically buying these seeds for off the internet for a buck, and then selling them for $10 by putting the word Patriot on it. Patriot Survival and Patriots for Survival. And so, he created a fake spokesperson. This fake spokesperson was a victim of liberals who chased them out of New England with their high taxes and their feminazi ways and their eco-terrorism. So he's just creating. I mean, you used to do this yourself. You told me when you were in Wall Street and selling crap to people on the phone, all sorts of shares, you would create a story to target their prejudice and why they needed to buy this in order to prove that their position is right.
Well, getting back to the Bitcoin Foundation, there's no use for it. It's not going to change the fact that Bitcoin has fundamentally altered the history of currency, and this, no foundation is going to change it. If the purpose of the foundation would have been to support Charlie Shrem, the fact that they asked him to walk the plank shows that the Bitcoin Foundation is subject to political pressure and therefore useless. So it's a useless organization. They have no sway over anything and they do nothing. So MaxCoin, I can tell you, there won't be a MaxCoin Foundation because it's completely not in keeping with the ethos of cryptocurrency. That's my point. I'm trying to make that point to the radio listening audience, is that if I start a MaxCoin Foundation, please shoot me.
Well, you heard it here on Residence 104.4 FM. This is The Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy. By the way, coming up is the annual fundraising for Residence 104.4 FM. And, you know, I know a lot of you out there have a few Bitcoin, a few Litecoin, a few... You don't have MaxCoin yet, but, you know, you have some altcoins, you have some silver, you have some gold. You know, reach into your pocket, take a little bit of it, and give it over to Residence 104.4 FM, because you wouldn't have been enlightened. Your mind wouldn't have been so liberated. You will not have been so entertained and, you know, given the mind of Max Kaiser channeled into your brain every Saturday night if it weren't for Residence 104.4 FM being on air. And to stay on air, it costs... you know, some money for the broadcasting license and all that stuff. They need a certain amount. You got to dip into your meager savings or extract some equity from your house, dudes, before it all blows. Just extract that equity and give it to Residence.
Well, Residence, I tell you how Residence can make some money right now is to start accepting Bitcoin. All you need to do is install BitPay. It'll take less than 2 minutes. So people with Bitcoin can immediately start sending you money. So if they don't do that, I'll be shocked.
Well, I think it's a good idea. And of course, you know, we started on this program back in, I think it was 2004. So is this 10 years on the air?
Apparently.
Oh my God. Wow. I didn't realize that. This is our 10-year anniversary. We started in about January or February of 2004.
I didn't know for sure if that was the case, but that seems like one lost weekend.
Yeah, well, we started after Shock and Awe, because 2003 was Shock and Awe, and then we went to the south of France, and then we came back to London in 2004, and yeah, it was definitely 2004. So yeah, this is 10 years. You're right, though. It feels like a long weekend. I can't believe it's at least 9 years, probably 10.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and it's time once again to dig into your pockets and give Residence some Bitcoin.
Yeah, if you have some physical Bitcoin, which you can do. Are you going to go get the bill and we can do a little bit of a stroll for the last 5 minutes? But see, you see how that clever way of manipulating this market? I got Max to get up and go pay for this, my porridge and my cappuccino. Because, and I see he's grabbing a croissant. So, one more thing about Resonance 104.4 FM. If you go to their website, resonancefm.com, it has all of the information about how to donate. I think they're also having quite a few number of live events, and Max doesn't know this yet, but we're going to probably do a live event as well next Sunday, not tomorrow, but next Sunday. Yeah, I think it's next Sunday, 7th. Yeah, the 9th. And 9th of February. And we're going to do some sort of live event where you could basically watch A Truth About Markets live. So I don't know what the fee will be, but there will be some charge on the door. It all goes to Resonance FM to keep them on the air. Maybe I should tell Max when he gets back about that, because... he's just happily eating his croissant and doesn't know that he has to actually work next weekend. But it's all worth it to keep Resonance on the air. So, fracking. While we're waiting for Max, he's getting his change, he's coming back. I want to talk about fracking in the last few moments, but first, I forgot to tell you, Max.
What?
Let's see. I've already told the audience. They know something you don't.
What?
And that's that next Sunday, not tomorrow, but next Sunday, Resonance wants us to do a live Truth About Markets in a pub down near the studio, and they'll charge a fee as part of their fundraiser. So next Sunday.
That sounds like fun.
Hey, you see? Max sounds very happy about this. But I also wanted to talk about, in the last few moments, Max, and we've got about 7 minutes, so I wanted to talk about fracking, but also this stuff that Boris Johnson was saying about, you know, as you're losing more and more sovereignty, right? And they're imposing things like TPIP, you know, these trade deals over which this third justice system is being introduced. And they're introducing things like fracking. And this new bill they're pushing, apparently, I was reading today, that it basically you would have no right over whether or not they frack under your land.
Right.
And at the same time, you see this, the beginning of this demonization of people who protest. And so, ooh, that sun feels nice.
Yeah.
You see, you feel a demonization. Let's stand in the sun a bit. So Boris Johnson was saying that he wants to bring in these water cannons, and he wants police to go to get medieval on rioters.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but at the same time, by the way, they're also supporting the Molotov cocktail throwing protesters in the Ukraine. But you wouldn't be allowed to have that here.
Yeah. Well, as we've discussed, the economics of fracking are atrocious. It's just surprising that the people in this country who are against fracking don't attack it on the fact that it's economically unviable. You know, that's the point about fracking. It's an energy negative event. In other words, it takes more energy to frack than you get out of the ground. So it doesn't increase your energy supply. Number two, it's going to increase your debt. And number three, the cost of the ecological cleanup would be 10 to 20 times greater than any benefit you get from the energy.
Well, it's also, you know, water here in the UK is so expensive, but in, you know, it's more expensive than in the US. But it's also what has happened in the US is that the water out of your faucet has often become flammable. So for some reason, there's a magical thinking. This time it's different. It's going to be different here in the in the UK. But, you know, I just don't see it. But, you know, good luck with your magic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's U.S. corporations. And then with TPP in place, if somebody who, let's say, their kids get cancer because of fracking, if they sue Halliburton or one of the big six energy companies here in the UK under TPP, the companies can sue the UK government for damages, and then the UK government is free to increase your taxes to pay for the fine, to pay for the damages that the company claims they have incurred giving you cancer.
Yeah, plus what we've already seen in the US, by the way. So again, what you could expect to see here is it won't be Halliburton itself. We're going to walk down Old Compton Street. It won't be Halliburton itself that is fracking for natural gas under your property. It won't be Halliburton. It'll be a subsidiary that they create, a shell corporation, which will go bankrupt as soon as it becomes no longer viable for them, economically viable. They'll just go bankrupt, leave you with the cost of the cleanup. And, of course, as they're bankrupt, you won't be able to. Everybody's always standing in the way, man.
Yeah.
But you won't be able to ever, you know, once your child gets cancer, there will be nobody to sue because they went bankrupt and they're protected by the courts.
Yeah, it's like a false flag operation. You know, these tankers that run adrift and start leaking oil, they go and they say, hey, someone's got to be responsible for this. And they say, well, it's not a false flag, but the flag of convenience. So the flag is from a country that has a registration that's in another country. So there is nobody owns the boat. But if it got to the destination, the people would get paid for taking the oil off the boat. That's not in dispute. But if there was a problem and it started leaking oil and it was abandoned, then they go through the registration and they find out, oh, nobody owns this boat. So when the fracking rigs come into the UK, they will give your kids cancer. That's proven. So you love, you know, that's fine. That's going to happen. I mean, it's good. You get a free Twinkie, though. But when you go to sue, there's going to be nobody to sue.
Well, David Cameron's allowing the fracking companies to bribe the local council so they can give them, you know, a couple thousand pounds and they'll be happy. They go on a junket. They stay in a, you know, in a, they go to the Super Bowl, one of those $50,000 deals. But the other thing is that, you know, when you talk about the flag of convenience, I read a story this week, which was pretty remarkable. It's Fiat, you know, the Italian car manufacturers.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to leave Italy. Not their plants. They're still going to make the cars there. What they're doing is moving their headquarters in a split between Amsterdam and London.
Yeah.
I.e., they're not going to pay any more taxes.
Right.
So they won't pay taxes to Italy, but London's going to shelter them here in a deal which will they'll pay a few thousand pounds to somebody in the city and instead of the millions of pounds to Italy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. Because that's why people, their wages are not going up, is that the people are not needed. The wages are not needed to support anything because companies can simply print their own money. And everyone else is being forced onto a reservation or a prison. That's pretty clear.
Well, that's the truth. But before that all falls apart, of course, you do have a few pence in your pocket, even 5 pounds. You know, that's what a pint costs these days. You know, save your liver a little bit of damage. Instead of having 5 pints tonight, have 4. And send the cost of one of those pints to Resonance 104.4 FM.
Oh, that's
FM.
A jolly good idea. Jolly good idea.
And maybe it's time to say goodbye for this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM.
Bye, y'all.